Okay. So we are in Perek Aleph Halacha Zayin. Okay. So if you remember, the Rambam was getting down. You should know that the last halacha in a perek in the Rambam does three things. It usually has a piece of content that's a separate entity, like, you know, this is the seventh halacha. There's something about the seventh halacha that sort of summarizes that chapter, that perek, right? With me here? Hey, right? There's something about that. Just come back, right? There's something about that seventh halacha that somehow makes a point that sort of summarizes the whole previous chapter, in this case, Perek Aleph, and it sets the stage for the next perek. Okay? It's a strange thing that at the end of Perek Aleph, the Rambam starts to say, so how does a person do this? How does a person begin to develop habits and direction to find moderation? Like, I would think that would be the beginning of the second perek. Right? Except that the Rambam wants at the end of this perek to sort of set the stage for the next perek. Okay? But in addition, this is really the conclusion of the first perek. The whole first chapter of the Rambam in Hilchos Deos is designed to get you to the point, so how do you do this? It's a big mistake people make in learning, in education. If I could pick the single greatest flaw of the American university educational system, education is supposed to be a vehicle. It's not supposed to be the goal. Education is not the goal. Education is a vehicle. You get educated in order to, right? You study a law degree to practice law, right? If you're studying a law degree so that you can just have on your resume, I have a law degree, you've missed the whole point of that educational process, right? And it's doubly true for Torah, okay? People make a mistake and they think that Torah is the goal, right? We mentioned this once before, right? Har Sinai is not the goal. Har Sinai is a stepping stone. It's a stopping point on the way, okay? It's not the goal. Like, people sometimes wonder, why wasn't Har Sinai in Israel? Like, where should you be getting the Torah, Libriyat? You should be getting the Torah in Israel, right? Like, that's what we're doing. Like, the whole premise of the fact that all these post-high school students come to Israel is that if you're going to work on developing a relationship with Torah, with God, do it in Israel. So how come they go to Har Sinai in the desert? Pardon? Har Sinai is not in Israel. Nope, Mount Sinai is definitely in the Sinai Desert somewhere. We don't even know.
Sinai part of Israel?
No, there was a period of time between 67 and 1978, or you could say 82, when we conquered that area from Egypt, okay? And we gave it back. In other words, pardon? Oh, you could visit it. There are security issues of visiting it today, but you could visit it.
Is it ancient Israel? It's not ancient Israel.
Not ancient Israel. In fact, think about it. Right, there are whole discussions about why Moses doesn't enter Israel. If Mount Sinai was in Israel, then Moshe would have entered Israel.
Wow.
Right, so if Moshe was there, obviously that's not part of Israel. Right, more than that, we don't even know where Har Sinai is, because the mountain itself is not important. And if the place isn't important, it's not the goal. It's just a vehicle. It's just a stepping stone. Right, so think about that, and ask yourself why. It's because Torah is not the goal. Okay. You get here and you study all this stuff. If it doesn't impact something that you do, if it doesn't change who you are, if you don't go back to wherever you go back to, or go on to wherever you go on to after a year in Israel, and you don't take this, whatever this is, and utilize it as a vehicle for, now my definition of for is for making the world a better place, for bringing Hashem into the world, for however you want to finish that sentence, then what's the point? Right? Knowing a lot of knowledge, if the knowledge doesn't impact action from a Jewish perspective, is a flawed perspective. Right? And that's why the Rambam at the end of this halacha says, okay, Ketzad yargil adam atzmo b'deot elu ad sheyikav ubo. How do you get into the zone where this becomes habitual? Like, it's nice when a guy remembers, you give a guy a shtuff, and he remembers, you know, I was in the car this morning, and our car broke down, so I was playing, you know, hitchhike to the garage. So I had to hitch in this morning to make it to the garage, right? And I got a ride. And I don't mind hitchhiking personally. I don't mind tramping, even though, you know, sometimes it takes more time and it's a little more of a hassle. Because you get to meet people you otherwise wouldn't meet. And it's interesting that people talk freely in the car when they think they're anonymous. So we had this great discussion. And I was talking with this lady who was kind enough to stop for me about hitchhiking, right? And She said, like, there are certain things about hitchhikers that drive her nuts. You know? And she gave me an example. She said one time a guy was standing at the Trempiada in, there's like a hitchhiking post, you know, sort of in Gilo before you head on the road to Efrat. Maybe you noticed it when you took a bus there. And you know, kind drivers stop there and pick up people to take a ride. It's a great system because it means that, you know, like, notwithstanding the fact that when you're here for a year in Israel with parents and security and stuff like that, pretty much all the yeshivot say don't hitch. But if you were here next year and you stayed another year, like, you'd be hitching all over the place. Like, you can get almost anywhere in Israel, and if you know how to do it and you're safe about it, it's a reasonably safe experiment, notwithstanding that there are policies in the yeshiva that make sense because of parents. And it works. You save an enormous amount of gas. People get to know each other. But sometimes people do things that are just rude. So she pulls up to this Trempiada, and you know, people are getting in. You know, where are you going? I'm going to here. I'm going to there. And there's a guy on his cell phone. And he's the last guy in the car. And he's finishing off his discussion on his cell phone, right? And he's like holding the door, sort of, you know how sometimes, like, when you're concentrating in a conversation, you don't realize you're stopping? So he's like standing there for a second or two, and she's in the car, she's driving, she wants to get home. So she's already getting annoyed, right? He looks in, he's on this conversation, he stops for a second, he says, Elazar, right? Like, I'm going to Elazar, not, can I go to Elazar, not, excuse me, not, I'm sorry, I'm on the phone, right? Okay? And then he gets in. Like, Kielu, it's her responsibility to let him know if she's not going to Elazar. Okay, so she waits till he's done with the phone, and she tells me that she tore him a new one. She just blasted this guy. You know, she said, I have a good mind to stop here and ask you to get out in the middle of the road. Like, what kind of chutzpah is that? So I was talking to her about that. I said, well, what made you decide to blast? He said, I think it's important to educate people. Like, let him think about it before he gets in. It's true. This is a person who has a habit that's so unhealthy, right, that there's something off. Right? So now let's say a guy gets in, and he gets into the car, and he says, thanks so much for taking me, I appreciate it, right? Would you be impressed that he said, thank you for picking me up? No, because that's just normal human behavior. That should be a habit. Now, there are things that we don't do, and then one day we just realize, we should do that. You know? We should do that. The things that you really want to make habits are the things that are a little above and beyond the norm. It's a sad commentary on society that they're not the norm, right? I'll give you a great example, okay? There are certain things that I would never make a rule and never hold someone accountable to, right? But that doesn't mean they're healthy. You know, like, we debated putting a series of shelves either in the hall here or in the back room, you know, sort of, you know, so that guys will have, like, a place to put their tefillin or a place to put, you know, books or Shabbos if you want to move books. And Scott made a really good point. He said, no, we can't put shelves out because when you put shelves out, they become places for mess. Anytime you have a surface, he ran a yeshiva for 11 years before he came to us, any surface that you have will become a mess. Now think about this. Look at this table. I don't have, this is not my pet peeve. I'm just noticing it now because we're talking about it. This table is a mess, right? In fact, I'm as guilty as you guys are. I do this all the time. I left the sefer here. There's my coffee mug from yesterday. Do you understand that? I didn't know where my coffee mug is, right? At the end of the day, I couldn't find it. So on the way in this morning, I got an aroma cafe, right? I had to pay a price for leaving this here. We do this all the time. Right? But it also means that nobody walked by, saw the coffee mug, and said, ah, this is Benny's coffee mug. Let's put it back in the office. Right?
We're not supposed to go in the office.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the system. I'm just saying, you know, you see a sefer here. There's a dictionary here. Right? This is not, by the way, the goal. The goal is not to shtuff you to do this. Right? This goes somewhere. At some point, shtuff is a musr, a little, you know, whatever. Right? So shtuff, to wash. You know, you wash a guy over a little bit. Right? Rake him over the coals. So this goes somewhere. Sort of Noam took all of this effort to mark them and label them so that we'd know where they go. And maybe the system isn't perfect. In my opinion, we can perfect it. You know, we don't do that. You know, nobody takes the sheets and puts them whatever. So I, at the end of class, I try. We do this with all sorts of things. Look over there. Look over there. You see this type of thing all the time. And I understand it because at the end of the day, at a certain point, you know, if you keep doing this and you're constantly putting people's stuff away, it gets annoying. You can develop frustration. You can develop anger towards people. That's not healthy. I'd rather have stuff on the shelves than people upset with each other. Right? There are all sorts of little things like that. You know what I mean? I don't know. You get out of a car at the end of a tramp, and the guy got out behind you. And you're walking away, and you notice he didn't close the door. It's a little thing, but it's a chutzpah, right? Somebody drove you, and he just forgot to close the door. Like, that's just off. So now the driver, so you walk back. You close the door. You're not responsible. You didn't get it. You just notice these things, right? You know, walking into the base matters, seeing that there's someone who's having a tough time, and walking over to him and saying, how's it going? You look like you're having a tough day. That's a habit that's worth developing. Most people don't take the time to develop that habit, but that's a habit worth developing. You can only develop that habit if you're getting the content of Hilchot Deot, but the question is, what do you do with it? That is this halacha. And it's going to set the stage for the rest of Hilchot Deot. Okay? Is there, you know, there was an article in the paper, and you see these every once in a while. There's a Rav, I forget his name, and maybe that's good, and he was found in Brazil. They've been looking for him in Israel for the last year. There was a terrible story. It made headlines. And you never know when you read the papers what is really true and what is their perception and what's politics. But if there's any truth to this story, it's a pretty serious story. Apparently, this was a family, and they had, like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 kids. I don't know what it is. And the mother brought in, you know, one of her children. And for, you know, he had a number of, you know, he broke his arm and he had this. And the nurse noticed that there was a burn mark and it looked like a cigarette burn. So legally, she's obligated to report that. So they report that. A policeman shows up and they start to investigate. And they realize that something's off and they go to the home and they find these kids. They found two children locked in a closet. They were locked in a closet, left in this house, right? And there was a bowl, like a dog bowl with some food in it. So obviously they opened up an investigation. They found that this fellow had been terrorizing his family and abusing his children. The fellow, wearing a beard and a long black coat and the whole geschäft, got from his neighbors that the police were there, and he skipped the country. He managed to get out. You don't run away from the country unless there's something that you're worried about. Anyway, they finally managed to extradite him. And I'm looking at this picture.
Neighbors
Pardon? I don't know the details of the story, but a guy doesn't escape and get to Brazil on his own. Like, certainly there are other people involved, but okay. And by the way, to be fair, there is a reasonable, it would be reasonable for a person who defines him or herself as ultra-Orthodox to say that the press in Israel is not exactly pro-Haredi. Like, I can understand if there's some sensitivity, but okay. Anyways, they brought him back for trial. So I'm looking at this picture of this guy, and he's a Rav, right? And on the news last night, they were interviewing people, and some fellow, and they brought him to court, and some fellow who's a relative of his, also a religious-looking guy, who says, look, I know him, he would never hurt a fly, I don't understand how this could be, right? They're just looking for it. And you look at this and you wonder, and by the way, underneath this story in the paper, there was another story of a fellow from the Yeshiva of Yitzhar, who apparently published an article or gave a shiur that said that it's permitted to kill non-Jews who are part of a population that wants to harm Israel. And you know, I think the particular Hebrew paper that was doing this was getting a little extravagant. So you look at this and say, okay, now those are two really good working definitions of extremism. There's no halachic basis for those two perceptions. So you ask yourself, how does a person get there? How do you get there? In order to create a system of habits that's going to put you in a healthy space, it's also worth understanding how easy it is to get yourself into an unhealthy space. How do you get there? Right?
Convicted?
Pardon? No, they're just starting with the indictment, right? So the Rambam actually lays this out. If you remember, we said that there are two terms that the Rambam uses. He uses the term chacham and the term chassid. Now, a chacham is somebody who's in the middle. And he recognizes that he's in the middle and he wants to stay in the middle. The chassid is somebody who goes to an extreme. The real question is, and this is where we left off yesterday, does he know he's in an extreme? Does he know it's an extreme?
Isn't it all chassid? Like, if you're a chassid, that's bad?
No. First of all, just to be clear, don't confuse the chassid term in the Rambam with chassidim today. That's a totally different... They borrowed that term, and there's a reason that they chose that term, but that's a totally different animal. Okay, so just so we're clear, we're not talking about chassidim today. Chassidim are part of the Hasidic movement, and what that is a discussion.
Also, like,
but a chassid in the Rambam is not bad. Of course it's not bad. Right, exactly, very good. So what is the chassid? Chassid is an elevated role. It's a very high level for a person to be chassid. The Gemara talks about chassidim arishonim, the first pious people who were trying, but the Rambam says, what does that mean? It means they were going to an extreme. Why were they going to an extreme? They were going to an extreme because, A, they want to be careful not to get to the wrong extreme, and B, because they want more. They want to be closer to Hashem. They want to work harder. That's good. That's not bad. It's important to realize that that's not obligated, right? But what's the difference between a chassid who knows he's a chassid and a chassid who doesn't know he's a chassid? Somebody who knows that he's leaning towards the extreme and someone who doesn't. So listen to this. The Rambam, and this is interesting because this is in Hilchot Yesod HaTorah. This is not even in Hilchot Deot. This is the foundations of Torah. This is in the same set of halachot that talks about the fact that if a Jew doesn't know that Hashem exists, he's missing something in his relationship with Judaism. That if you don't understand that Moshe and blah, 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 right? So the Rambam in Perek Hey Halacha Yud Aleph. Okay, you don't have this in front of you, but if anybody wants a copy, you can look it up or come to me and I'll photos that for you. But listen to this. V'yesh dvarim, okay? V'yesh dvarim acherim, shehin b'chlal chilul Hashem. And there are things, other things, that relates to what was previously said in the Rambam, that are actually a desecration of God's name. By the way, the Rambam says that the worst thing that a person can do in this world is lecharel shem shamayim. Okay, to profane the name of God, which essentially means to distance God from the world. If the purpose of why we're here is to bring Hashem into the world, to be vehicles for having a world that has an objective ethic, for making a better world, so then distancing Hashem from the world, allowing anarchy, allowing Nazism, whatever it is that you define that as, is not just that you're not doing good, it's the antithesis. It's against the purpose of creation. Right? So what are these things that the Rambam says make a chilul Hashem? Listen to this. For who she ase otam adam gadol b'torah u'mefosam b'chassidut. And that's when someone who is an acknowledged, famous as a great person in Torah, right? Who is famous or known to be a chassid. Okay? This is amazing. The Rambam is writing this in the 12th century. They were dealing with this back then, 800 years ago, right? Dvarim she'abriot merananim acharav bishvilam. Things that people follow him for. Right? Knows that he's a chassid and that he's a talmid chacham. V'af al pi she'inan averot. And even though we're not talking about transgressions, right? You can't say that if a person doesn't say thank you, he's somehow transgressed. You can't say that he's now going to be chayav to offer up a korban in the Beit HaMikdash, there's a chatas, that he has to, right? It's just something that's off. Harei zeh chilel ot Hashem. Such a person was mechal al shem shamayim. Kigon, and he gives an example, right? Shalakach ve'eino noten dmei ha-mekach la'altar. Now, let's say you buy something, and you don't pay right away, right? I know a fellow who, it's just a zone that he gets in. He's a little disorganized. And he'll sometimes ask you to borrow money, right? And, you know, somebody asks me to borrow money, if I have it, I'll always lend money, right? It's a big mitzvah. And I know with him, like, you either don't get it back or he remembers it so later, right? So when I give this person a loan, like, I remember once we were somewhere together, I needed a loan, and I lent him $20, and I made a conscious decision in my mind that I'm going to look at this as staka. Like, if somebody borrows money, there's a halacha that if you borrow money from someone or he lends you money, that you really should write it down, you should have edus, that's halacha. The Chafetz Chaim was very makpid, you should always have a contract. And there are people that I've lent money to, and I write it down, and they sign it, and I sign it, and that way they feel, you know, and there's also halacha, you're not supposed to remind them. Like, you don't talk.
If you don't get your money back.
Then you don't get your money back. So you're entitled. There are vehicles for redress. There are. You can go to a person, you can say, look, I feel terrible, but I need the money. You can go back to a person, you can have the witnesses go to him, you can go to a Beis Din. There are ways to do it. You know, but I personally, like, I'm not lending that much money that it'll. Yeah, no, whatever it is, right? So there's an interesting halacha when and how you're allowed to, and because you have to be very careful, you can make a person feel really bad. So there's a difference between saying, where's my 50 shekels? And saying, look, I don't know if you have it, and if you don't, then that's cool, but if you do, I really could use the 50 shekels back, and I appreciate it. And you have to be careful, right? So you write it down. And when a person pays you back, you actually have it, like this is what I do, I bring him into my office, and I rip up the loan paper, and I give it to him. Right, because if it sits there by accident, you may think something or something happens to you. Right, but if you buy something, if I say, listen, you know, I really want to buy that Rambam, and you're going to America, so you sell me your Rambam, but I don't have the money on me. Right, there's no halacha that says I have to run back, get the money, and give it to you. I'll give it to you tomorrow.
If
you're a chassid, if you're a huge Talmud Chacham, and you don't pay right away, that's a chilul Hashem. You haven't done an avera. In other words, there's that gray area of being a mensch. Of knowing that a person walks away. And how would you define those things? I'll ask in a second. How would you define those things? Those are the things that if a person does them, he leaves others walking away saying, that's a mensch. That's what a person should be. And that's what you want. Right? There are people in this world who are such fine human beings that you grow simply by being around them. I've had the privilege of being around a couple of people like that in my life. Right? It's amazing. I mean, I told you once about Rav Tversky. When I get the chance to see Rav Tversky, I spend time with him because I just grow from being around him. I used to leave shul. They had a house on our block for a couple of years, and when he would come, so I would walk the opposite way away from home, take an extra few minutes just to walk him home. And every time I did, I was the better for it. There's always something he has to say, something to share. They're just people that are such fun people. You become better from being around them. You know, not everybody's like that. But that's your goal. Your goal is to be that person. I don't know how you know that you get there. It's an interesting question, but that's at least the goal. So the Rambam goes on. You want to add something?
Well, so, like, that's if you borrow, like, a significant amount of money. But let's say someone's 10 cents short and you lend him a dime.
Yeah.
But it's not like you ever need the dime back.
I mean, right. That's a great example. If I lent a guy a dime or a shekel, whatever it is, in my mind, I would say this is a gift. Because I don't want him, chas v'shalom, to be over in Gezel. If he doesn't pay you back, technically, he's stolen money. You don't want a person to be in that stage. So I would just make in my mind, you know, take it, whatever. And sometimes you say it, but no, no, I'll pay you back. That's fine. But you can make in your mind, it's hefker, I give it up, whatever it might be. But you're not obligated to. But he and his, let's say I borrow a shekel from you. So I don't think you're going to hold me accountable if I don't give you back a shekel, I imagine. But there's a chilul Hashem involved in that. Because on a certain level, right, so I'm in a different role than you are. So the potential for me being Mechal Hashem Shemayim by not paying you a shekel is greater than you being Mechal Hashem Shemayim by not paying me a shekel. Do you agree? So that's who he's talking about. And he's not talking about me. He's talking about people who have a shame of being for some. There's a particular rabbi who's a great, great Torah scholar. And every once in a while, he gets quoted in the papers as saying things that are just off. Now, I take them with a grain of salt. You know, I when I see the headline, I don't read the article. I'm just not willing to read Lashon Hara about such a great Torah scholar. But if a person is saying things and they're being interpreted that way, something's wrong. They don't say that about every Torah scholar. Something's wrong. And that's Chilul Hashem. It's a huge responsibility. So he says, for example, right? He says, V'hu sheyesh lo, v'nimtzua mochrim tovin v'hu makifan. And he says, especially if a person has the money, and the people who are selling him, they're looking for it back. There's something off with that. Or he's a little too lightheaded. Like there's a healthy balance between being jolly, you know, having a good time, and being sort of what they call in Hebrew a leitzan. Like there's a point of kidding around or fooling around or making jokes, whatever it may be, that you don't expect from a Rebbe. Because there's an appropriate line. But there might not be an iser, right? There might not be a prohibition. That's a chilul Hashem. That's a huge chilul Hashem because that's off. Right? And he goes on. Okay? Oh, one second. Oh, shediburoi mabriot eino benachat. This is my favorite. Or he doesn't talk to people pleasantly. Do you understand? Let's say we're walking out of the basement. And I got to get to my office. Maybe I hear my cell phone ringing. And maybe I know that there's somebody who's trying to get me and I know it's important. And you're like dawdling for a second, right? So there's a pleasant way to say, you know, excuse me. But what if I'm in a rush? Like, could you move out of the way? Is there an iser? Is there a prohibition? No iser. You can't point to a place in halacha that says that prohibited. That says the Rambam is a chilul Hashem. That falls into that gray area. It's interesting the Rambam is listing these things in the same breath that he's saying, how do you, right, in the same word, sorry, the word chassid, that he quotes as being somebody who's going to an extreme. In other words, this is a person who is off balance. That's his chassid. This is the person. Why does he say a chassid? This person's off balance. But he might not be off balance halakhically. He's just off balance. Yeah?
Why does it matter if there's an issue for something, if the onus for Navera is an Navera, and if you do something that would make you feel like you did in Navera, why would it matter if it's an issue?
Oh, that's a very good question. What's the difference whether there's actually a prohibition in Israel or not? I'll tell you. Because the Torah comes up with a recipe, but it expects us to be partners. Okay? And it's actually not difficult when you have a system, and the system is especially written, to live within that system. What's challenging is to recognize the goals of that system and to expand beyond the system. You know, it's like, for example, any system has its lines. You have to have lines, right? But real growth comes beyond the lines. You know, like I'm very much struggling with sort of what's going on in this yeshiva at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's not that I don't get it. I get it, right? I'm struggling with it because I think that I'm struggling with what's the best path to get us where we need to get to. And that's a great indicator that we're not there. And I'm not talking about whether a person davens. You know, you're here at 8 and you go up on the roof. I'm okay with that. You know, that's we have different energies in different space. It means that you're taking this day seriously. You're trying to grow, whatever, right? So people that don't do that, that's a serious, serious issue. But that's not where the real growth comes. That just means somebody who isn't following, in this case, the halacha of the yeshiva, and he has to get there. That's very definable. And the fact that there's a rule and there's a system, so it's easy to create a system of consequences and whatever. Real growth comes not at 8 o'clock. Real growth comes at 7:50, right? There's really no reason that a person who's here at 8 can't be here at 7:50. Think about it. What could you do with those 10 minutes in a day? Sitting on your own in the basement, right? That's real growth. But no one's going to demand it of you because that's something you could choose to demand of yourself. And the things that you demand of yourself that are beyond what's defined is where you really grow. That's first of all. Second of all, it's important to know because there are consequences that don't exist when it isn't part of a system, right? In other words, the reason that a system defines this, that's where you start. And by the way, sometimes people go beyond the extreme, right? Because they're working on something, but meanwhile, they're missing the system. So it's not about what a person does and where a person's at and where a person's healthy. It's more about recognizing that that's a reality. Make sense? It's like imagine that a person is fanatical about making sure that on his car, the hazard lights are bright. And he gets a car and he decides, those winkers, they're not bright enough. I want better lights. I want brighter lights. So he puts on lights that are fog cutting, that are super duper, that whatever, so that people can see him from far away. He paints red streaks on his car so that in the event the brake light goes, people will see him because he's concerned about safety. But while he's spending all his time and his money doing this, he drives down the highway at 140 miles an hour. Right? So there's something off with that. So the reason there's a system is because the system tells you, here's where you start. This is what you work on first. Right? If you're stealing, I don't know, imagine that we had, that somebody here decided we don't want to have to go down to the store. We want to be able to get cakes. You know, somebody asked us this last year. Can't we have like a little, you know, pinah corner where there's like cakes and cupcakes and whatever, and then guys can just come. So I said, listen, the yeshiva's not going to provide that. But if you guys want to do that, that's an easy thing. So there were a bunch of guys that did this, right? They, you know, one guy would go once a week and he'd get like, you know, a bunch of cakes and he'd lay out the money and they put it on a table and they put a coupon there, right? And if you came and borrowed a cake, you took it. And I said to him, I said two things. First of all, I'm willing to do this as long as it works. If it becomes a vehicle, God forbid, for unhealthy behavior or stealing, then I don't want that in yeshiva. And it worked. Eventually, it stopped working because he just didn't want to lay out the money and he was lazy and somebody else got lazy. And that's not laziness because he's not obligated to do it. That's great. That doesn't bother me. Right? That's like beyond the system. But if a guy is doing that, let's say a guy's going there and he's taking cakes and he's stealing money. But at the same time, he's doing that, he's working on, I don't know, not speaking Lashon Hara, or not speaking at all, doing a Ta'anit Dibur, so that he can work on Lashon Hara. There's something off with that. There's something off with the person who's stealing, but he's working on an extreme somewhere. Like, find first the balance. Does that make sense? Right? So the Rambam goes on, and he says, so, Oshet Diburo ima Briot eino benachat, veino makablan besever panim yafot. He doesn't accept them with a happy countenance. By the way, this is interesting. I'm not talking about when you think you're doing something right, and you're really not, but you don't get it. You know? You should at least think you're doing this right. Now, you're not obligated to smile at every person you meet. That's not in halacha. That's in Pirkei Avos. It's ethics. Right? You're not obligated to greet with a smile every person you meet. Okay? But that's something worth practicing. However, if you're Talmid Chacham, if you're a Chassid, if you're in an extreme, and you don't do that, that's Chilul Hashem, right? If I walk in here in the morning, and I'm not sure I'm the example here, but from your perspective, maybe, if I walk here in the morning and I see you and I don't say good morning and I'm not nice, even though technically I haven't done anything wrong, and you say to me good morning and I say whatever, like just something, what? That's Chilul Hashem. That's what the Rambam says. Now the question is, how does a person get there? So I think that a person gets there because he's immersed in his chassidut and he doesn't even realize it's chassidut. Going to an extreme is a dangerous thing. It can be a very healthy thing, but you have to know it's an extreme. But if you start to think that the extreme is the middle, that's when you get into trouble. A chassid needs to know that he's a chassid. The Rambam makes this point in a number of places. Know that you're a chassid, you're not a chacham. And what happens is people get into the extreme and they start to think that the extreme is the norm. And so everybody has to be in the extreme. And pretty soon, they're extremists. And when you're in the extreme and you don't know you're in the extreme, when you're not doing it for the right reasons, right? When you're a chassid but you don't know you're a chassid, that's when Chilul Hashem creeps its way in, right? So that's why the Rambam puts this sort of at the foundation at the beginning, of this. And I'll just finish this halacha just to read these examples, right? V'kayotzei b'dvarim ha'elu, akol lefi godlo shel chacham, tzarich shiyedakdek al atzmo, v'yaseh lifni mishurat adin. A person who wants to be a chacham, he has to be mitak, he has to go above and beyond the letter of the law, right? V'chein, and now he switches to chacham. Because the chacham is the person who is in that middle ground. How do you stay there? He's struggling to stay there in that range. V'chein im digdeka chacham atzmo, he is careful about himself. V'haya diburo b'nachat, and he speaks pleasantly. Imabriot, with all living creatures. Right? It's interesting. It doesn't say that he has to speak pleasantly to his fellow Jew. It doesn't say he should speak pleasantly to his students. It says he has to learn to speak pleasantly with every human being. Right? If I can come in here and you're my student and we have whatever, and I speak to you nicely, and then I'm walking down the stairs and there's some guy walking by with a trolley and he's in my way and I say, could you move out of the way? Something's off with that. Like, there goes all the lessons of Hilchot Deot out the window. Right? And the Chilul Hashem, think about your perception, if I was to do such a thing. And we're all human. We make mistakes. But at least you have to be aware of the significance of such mistakes. It's almost better not to present yourself. You know, there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that says, a person has a Yetzirah. What do you do if you have a Yetzirah? You're not succeeding in overcoming it. So the Gemara says, take it to the Beis Medrash. Take it to the Beis Medrash. It's harder to, you know, if you're the kind of guy who goes on internet and does things that are really unhealthy, and you know that it's wrong, and you know it's a Yetzirah. So spend time in the Beis Medrash. It'll be harder to do it in the Beis Medrash. Let's say that's not working. You just can't get it off your mind. And you keep sneaking out, or you do it in the Beis Medrash. So there are all sorts of different etzot. Give tzedakah. At the end of the day, the Gemara says, if you're really stuck and you can't beat this Yetzirah, go to a place where no one knows you. Change your clothes. Do your Yetzirah. Get it over with, and go back to the Beis Medrash. And then try to beat it again. That's an unbelievable Gemara. That Gemara is not halachic Gemara. The Gemara is suggesting you have to know where you're at, you have to know who you are, but you're still better off doing it in a place where no one knows who you are. Now, I would have thought, I remember when I first saw the Gemara, I'm like, well, isn't that hypocritical? No, it's not hypocritical. It's a recognition of the impact that who you are has on your environment. Right? V'chein, right? V'chayotze b'dvarim ha'elu. Right? Sorry. And if a person is medaktik, he speaks pleasantly with people. And his knowledge, his relationship, he's mixed up with them. He cares about them. And he receives them with a healthy, with a beautiful countenance. In other words, he's pleasant. And he can be insulted by them, but he doesn't insult them. He's hurt if they're in pain, but he doesn't allow himself to hurt them. Right? Mechabedlen, you respect them. V'yafilu lemakilinlo, and even people who take him lightly. Like, even if someone takes you lightly, you still have to respect them. But that's not halacha. That's beyond halacha. Right? V'nosei v'noten be'emuna, and he deals in business with faith. In other words, I don't know quite how to describe this. There's certain people you do business with, they're just healthy to do business with. They're just healthy. Those are the people you look for in business partnerships. He hasn't been too much time hanging around with people that are unsavory characters, whatever that means. And you see him all the time learning Torah, wrapped in tzitzis, crowned with tefillin, doing things that are above and beyond the letter. As long as he doesn't go too far and doesn't become destructive, boring, negative. Until people want to welcome him in and they love him and they desire his actions. That's what you want to be. And the Rambam says that's the danger and the joy of Chochman Chasidut. And that will take us back tomorrow to finish Perek Aleph, to get through Halacha Zayin, to understand how we can make this as a habit. But the first question that you have is, you know, what do you want your habits to be? Right? A little food for thought. Boker Tov. Have a great day. I would just like to say, let me just turn this off. Yeah, sorry.
Hey, so what's this that had not to do with self-care?